Conference record has joined the conference.
Once again, my name is Harold Ogle from the Java Community Process Program Management Office, and I'm talking today about the changes in JCP 2.8 over previous versions, particularly 2.7, and in particular, the ways in which it's different for spec leads and maintenance leads. Now, to start, I wanted to point out a number of documents that you can refer to that talk about JCP 2.8. First, there's the 2.8 document, which you can find in the left nav of jcp.org. It's jcp.org/en/procedures/JCP2, or for a specific permanent reference, JCP2_8. Those of you who aren't familiar, there may be some, we have a guide for spec leads to assist in the administrative aspects of the process, the spec lead guide. And that is also on jcp.org. At jcp.org/en/resources/guide. Within that same directory, there is an overview of 2.8 changes. It's not just aimed at spec leads, although there is a section that calls out changes that are of interest to spec leads and maintenance leads. It also talks about how it's different for the public, what the public can expect of a 2.8 JSR, what an expert group member can expect of a 2.8 JSR, and the like. That is in that same resources directory, but the file is 2.8. And then I also wanted to point out the spec lead frequently asked questions. It's just a section of the FAQ. There's a link in the left nav. As was suggested earlier, I will be putting the slides that I'm referring to up on the website. I apologize that I didn't have them up already. If you're in the WebEx section, session, you can see them as I have them up now, or you should be able to. So first I wanted to talk about the changes to JSR proposals, that is, the initial JSR submission and the information that's available on the JSR detail page. So there's a number of things that are added to a JSR proposal when you make a JSR proposal that are specified by JCP 2.8. First of all is the idea that there is a JSR review that takes place before the ballot and separate from the ballot. The idea is that the proposal can be viewed and commented and discussed by the community before the executive committee is actually voting on it. In the past, as you know, it's been simultaneous, and so it's been a little strange if you get feedback and desire to make a change to the JSR because really can't be making changes to the proposal during the ballot. This way, you can specify whether you want to have a 2-week or a 4-week JSR review period, and the JSR will be posted and announced to the public, and the public can provide feedback, and you can make revisions to the proposal based on feedback or based on input from the expert group as it's forming before it goes up for ballot. If you are looking at the slides, or in case you will be looking at the slides later on, each of these items has a little bracketed reference to where this is presented in the JCP 2.8 document. So the JSR review is first discussed in section 2.2. I will note that the JSR approval ballot is unchanged beyond the fact that it takes place after the JSR review. So it's a two-week ballot on which the EC votes to approve or reject the proposal. Another thing that is required of a new JSR proposal is a public communications channel. And this is it's kind of a loaded phrase, but it is composed of a number of different elements. First of all, it is a mechanism that makes all expert group communications publicly visible, so that the public can see the expert group discussions. There also needs to be a mechanism for the public to provide feedback. They aren't necessarily the same thing, although they can be. Say if you have an open forum where the expert group is doing their communications and people can post to it, you could do it that way. You could do it that there is a forum that the public can read, that the expert group can write to, and that there is a separate parallel forum that the experts, that the public can write to and the expert group can respond to. So you can keep them separate, you can put them together. What's required is that you have both of those elements. Those are in sections 1.1.1 and 1.2.1 of the JCP 2.8 process document. Another requirement of JCP or for a JCP 2.8 JSR is having an issue tracker. And this is one of the more fundamental changes to my mind with the 2.8. The idea that you have an issue tracker is in many ways a primary way for the public to provide feedback on the JSR, particularly if there's critique or suggestions. The idea is that the public can, there is a mechanism for the public to log issues to the issue tracker, and that the issue tracker is reviewed by the executive committee at each milestone of the JSR, by which I mean that the executive committee representatives who are considering voting on the JSR, and even when they're not voting on the JSR, even for milestones, where there isn't an EC vote, that the EC can review the progress of issues and whether similarly, whether comments in the public communications channel are being responded to, and that they can then contact the spec lead for follow-up. If it seems like there are issues that aren't getting an adequate response, they can bring that to the attention of the rest of the executive committee, but also have a conversation with the spec lead about it. And, of course, it's something that they can consider when there is a ballot, since the executive committee is free to base their vote on the JSR on myriad issues. It can include the responsiveness of the spec lead and expert group to issues that are logged and comments that are provided by the public. But the idea that you have these issues that are continually being tracked and are being reviewed at each milestone is perhaps for some of you, you've been doing this already through various source code projects that that you've been doing on java.net or elsewhere. So that may not be a big change, but that it's a requirement, it's fairly significant. This is in section 1.1.2 of the JCP 2.8 process back then. Another requirement in section 1.1.1 is that the expert group has a publicly accessible archive of all the documents that they are considering and exchanging as part of the work of the expert group. This could be, again, part of the public communications channel, but it is called out as a separate item in the JSR proposal because it doesn't necessarily have to be the same part of the same channel. It could be a different mechanism to make the documents available. There is a change to the description of the specification license that you present at JSR submission, the initial proposal. As you probably remember, with 2.7 was introduced the requirement that the license that you as the submitter and spec lead plan to have apply to the final release for the specification, the RI, and the TCK all be provided up front with the JSR proposal. Well, 2.8 explicitly says that the specification license that you present in the proposal may not change due to concerns about early implementers. It does go on to say that the RI and TCK license may change both over the course of the JSR's work going up to final release, but also that it may be changed after final release, but that if it changes the license for the RI and or the TCK, if it changes after final release, that the terms that were available at final release also must continue to be supported and available so that implementers can choose to continue using the license that was available when they were first implemented. Another requirement of 2.8 JSRs is that the names of the individual people, the actual experts who are serving on the expert group, need to be publicly visible. This is something that we've had a long time in our transparency checklist, but has not been implemented on JCP.org. So we now have it implemented on JCP.org for JCP 2.8 JSRs so that the people, each person on the expert group is listed with their JCP member affiliation. Right now we only have one JCP 2.8 JSR, that's the JSR 352, which went up yesterday. But if you like, you can take a look at that page and see how that is presented. And that requirement is discussed in section 1.2.1. Another change related to the expert group is in section 1.2.1, and this has to do with the deliberations for the expert group nomination process. As you know, there is a form that people who want to be on the expert group fill out to nominate themselves for the expert group. Spec leads of JCP 2.8 JSRs need to make the who has nominated and any discussion and the decisions on those nominations publicly visible. moving on to the next slide, I'll talk about JSR deadlines. So JCP 2.8 introduces the idea of deadlines for different JSR milestones. And if those milestones aren't met by the deadline, the executive committee may choose to request a renewal ballot. And the renewal ballot is another new idea of the of JCP 2.8. And the idea of a renewal ballot is that the EC votes to extend a grace period for the JSR to produce the milestone in question, or they're in danger of being shut down. The renewal ballot is slightly different depending on which milestone we're talking about. So the different deadlines that are laid out in JCP 2.8, the first one is the early draft review. Early draft review must be posted within 9 months after the JSR approval ballot is approved. The public review needs to be posted within 12 months of the close of the early draft review. And the final release of the JSR needs to happen within 12 months of the close of the public review and within 14 days of the approval of the final approval ballot. Now, the last deadline that's laid out in the JCP 2.8 document is the maintenance release deadline. And this is actually different from the others because it is up to the maintenance lead to set a deadline for him or herself. And that happens in the maintenance review submission. As part of the maintenance review submission, the maintenance lead is asked to provide the date by which the maintenance release will happen, assuming that the maintenance review is approved. And so then if that deadline is met, then the EC can request to have a maintenance renewal ballot for that JSR. Now, I specifically said that the EC can request these things, or they may request them. The renewal ballot doesn't happen automatically. The executive committee and the JCP 2.8 process document anticipate that there will be times when the EC and pretty much everyone is aware of extenuating circumstances that prevent a JSR from meeting these deadlines, or that there are just would be some extenuating circumstances which the spec lead could make the EC aware of, and so the EC would decide to not hold a renewal ballot, that it wasn't necessary to do so. If a renewal ballot is approved, in each case, the JSR is granted a year, essentially, to continue before another renewal ballot can be held, and thus risk closing down the JSR. All this is discussed in JCP Section 1.3 of the 2.8 document. Now, I talked about a couple of them already, but the next slide talks about new stages in JCP 2.8 and changes to the way that balloting is done, or changes to ballots specifically. Excuse me. So the first new stage is the JSR review stage, which I talked about first. Again, this is a 2 to 4 week period where the JSR is made publicly accessible and visible and open for consideration and discussion, public scrutiny, before it goes to the EC for the JSR approval ballot. The thing I should point out about the JSR review is that it continues until the JSR approval ballot begins. And as some of you are familiar with previous versions of the JCP process, particularly with the public review duration, this can mean that the JSR review duration will be somewhat longer than the requested 2 or 4 weeks because it continues until the Monday before the ballot begins on a Tuesday. All EC ballots begin on Tuesdays and run through generally Mondays. So the JSR approval ballot is a 2-week ballot, starts on a Tuesday, and it goes through 2 weeks following that. So if a JSR a JSR review starts for a 2-week review on a Tuesday, it would end on a Monday, and it would be exactly 2 weeks long. If it started on a Friday, it would go for 2 weeks to a Thursday and then have an additional Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, an additional 4 days. So it would be 2 weeks in our hypothetical example, 2 weeks and 4 days before the ballot begins. So the next change to the way that different stages and ballots in particular work is the public review ballot now begins after the public review period ends. So similarly, the public review, as it has been for a while, will extend to a Monday. But instead of it being, it extends to a Monday to accommodate for the end of the public review draft approval ballot, it will extend to a Monday for the beginning of a public review draft approval ballot, which begins on the Tuesday after the public review closes. So that means that there, potentially the public review is that much longer before the work can begin on getting a proposed final draft posted if, say, there weren't any public comments that required changes to the specification of public review. It's a bit longer. Now, that is talked about in Section 3.4 of the JCP 2.8 document. A new ballot that is introduced in JCP 2.8 is the maintenance review ballot. This replaces the old conditional item exception ballot process. Now every maintenance review in JCP 2.8 has a maintenance review ballot that follows the maintenance review period. So much like the public review, maintenance review will go until the Monday before a maintenance review ballot begins. And the maintenance review ballot works much like the other ballots. It determines whether the proposed changes should continue to a maintenance release. That's discussed in Section 5.2 of the JCP 2.8 process document. Another ballot that is introduced in JCP 2.8 is the withdrawal ballot. Now, the withdrawal ballot is triggered by a very specific set situation when a JSR has gone final and the maintenance lead has not fixed broken links to the RI and TCK. So with a final release, there is a link to download the specification, and there is information on where to go to get the RI and the TCK. If those links go bad, then the PMO contacts the maintenance lead to fix them. If they're not fixed within a set period of time, then the EC may call, much like the renewal ballot, the EC may choose to call for a withdrawal ballot. And that ballot determines whether a JSR is withdrawn because there are no valid RI and TCK links. This is discussed in section 4.3 of the JCP 2.8 document. The maintenance renewal ballot I talked about before, this is when the maintenance lead provided a maintenance review and with that set a target date for him or herself to publish the maintenance release, and that didn't happen. Then the EC can choose to have a maintenance renewal ballot. Now, if the maintenance renewal ballot fails, then the maintenance review that was approved prior to that ballot is rescinded. And so those changes cannot be made without repeating the maintenance review. This is discussed in section 5.3 of the JCP 2.8 process document. And there is specific language in JCP 2.8 that talks about the ballot to transfer the leadership of a JSR to a different spec lead or maintenance lead via a transfer ballot. So the idea of a transfer ballot existed in previous JCP versions, but it's much more specific in the JCP 2.8 document in the duration and how a transfer ballot is requested. And that's discussed in section 5.1.1. Conceptually, it's not different from previous versions of the transfer ballot, but it's much more specific in how it's requested that an expert group is having difficulties with an unresponsive spec lead and have escalated the issues to the PMO and to the executive committee without adequate resolution, then a transfer ballot can be requested and the executive committee can consider requiring the spec lead to change. Similarly, if a maintenance lead is not being responsive to the community, that can trigger a transfer ballot after a number of escalations. Talking about maintenance, and moving on to the next slide, there are a couple of changes that I feel need to be called out for you to how maintenance works or things that are required in maintenance. So the first one, although it's the second item on the slide, we've talked about already, which is that when you submit a maintenance review, you provide a maintenance lien provides a date when the maintenance release is going to happen. And a maintenance renewal ballot can result if that deadline isn't met. The other thing is that the maintenance liens are now required, maintenance liens of JCP 2.8 are required to provide a list of all compatible and publicly or commercially available implementations of the JSR specification and send that list to the PMO for public posting to the website. So, and that list needs to be updated at least quarterly. So the idea is that a maintenance lead needs to be aware of who is actually passing the TCK and with their implementations and making compatible implementations, and that that information is very interesting to the community at large. So I will pause before I turn it over to Marta to see if there are any questions about the stuff that I've discussed so far. Or if there are items that I failed to point out or need further elaboration that the people who worked on JSR 348 were on the call might like to point out. Well, it sounds like there aren't any questions. I also encourage you, if you, questions occur to you later on, after the call, that is, you can send mail to me or preferably to pmo@jcp.org, and we can follow up. Now, if I may, I'd like to turn it over to Martin Fairberg, who is the JCP representative on the executive committee for the London Java community, and let him talk about his perspective on JCP 2.8. Martin?
Cool. Thanks very much for the introduction, and thanks everyone for tuning up for the call today. I know that going over these sorts of documents and things can be a bit of a dry topic. I guess from my perspective and the perspective of a lot of day-to-day developers I've talked to, this new JCP 2.8 is very exciting because it opens a lot of doors to allow a much wider variety of people to get involved in Java standards. And this is really important to spec leads for two reasons. One is that the Java ecosystem is an increasingly complex space, and especially if you are designing a JSR, let's say in the JEE space, there's a whole heap of technologies and other JSRs that you need to be aware of. And that expertise for each of those individual pieces, for example, let's say the transactions API or the JMS API or CDI and things like that, may not exist within your group. And it becomes an increasingly difficult task for a spec lead to sort of spread him or herself out and to try and learn about all these bits and pieces and not cobble certain features in it at the very last second once they realize there's yet another EE spec out there to merge in. I guess the other perspective is that you're far more likely to have your standards succeed out in the real world, as it were. There are a bunch of Java standards which have had very little adoption simply because they've been incredibly unfriendly to the average developer out there. And that's not because the experts didn't know what they were doing or necessarily had a bad idea. It's simply that they had no early input from the broader Java community on how a specification could and should work. The last point, I guess, is the fact that being a spec lead or being an expert group member and trying to build on these standards is a pretty lonely job, and it's a very difficult one. It's very time intensive, and it certainly can feel like that there is no one out there in the world listening to you and your efforts. But by having the process open up and having the public mailing lists, the public issue trackers, and all those sorts of things, it actually enables people like myself to organize, for example, the Java user groups around the world to actually start providing you guys some real support. The most recent example I can give for this is JSR 310, which is the date and time JSR going into Java 8. The London Java community has put together a team of about 8 to 10 developers that are actually going to work on the TCK for the spec lead and for the expert group there. So that's a large resource that you no longer have to worry about or have to put together. Outside of offering direct help, direct, I guess, technical help like that, you can also actually have the community help you with things like triaging the tracker, helping keep the conversation flowing on the mailing lists, and actually helping even police those mailing lists, because there's nothing better than a self-policing community to make sure that the conversations are kept on track. So there are a whole bunch of sort of hidden and actual practical benefits to moving to this next version of the JCP, as it were. I guess Heather or Patrick, I believe, is going to talk a little bit more about a later session in November, because of course with this new openness, the concern is for a lot of spec leads, I believe, is that there's going to be an awful lot of annoying noise coming from the so-called community. And I guess this is akin to trying to run a large open source project, which is pretty much what JSR 348 is moving a Java standard towards. It's running a mini open source project to put together a standard. There are many, many people and many, many examples of successful open source projects that have been able to successfully manage the noisiness of the communities coming in and to actually turn the communities from being a force that blocks you or takes up your time into a force that actually works for you. In the November call, myself and perhaps some others will go into some specific details on how you can manage these communities so they do start taking over the work for you and actually assist you as opposed to getting in your way. But yeah, if there are any questions or concerns that people have right now about the opening up of this process, then please do yell out, and I'll try my best now to help alleviate those concerns. Nope. Okay. Well, I guess that's all I really have to say about it. I will be announcing on a Java User Group Leaders call on the 31st of October the official launch of the Adopt a JSR program that all of the Java user groups around the world are going to try and participate in. We are going to push this out to corporations as well. So some of the corporations that do have a larger resource base, which could be used to help a Java standard move forward, will also get involved. And we're simply going to try and be a conduit to try and help the spec leads and then help each individual JSR move forward and provide the sort of useful resources as opposed to the annoying noise that large communities can bring in these situations. So if you have any questions about that, then please don't hesitate to contact me as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Martin. So As Martin mentioned, we're planning on having another call in November talking more about expert group transparency. And stay tuned for details on when and how we're going to hold that. Are there any other issues or questions, discussion items that people would like to bring up? All right. Well, having said that and hearing nothing, I will say that if you want a copy of the slides, I will have them posted from that same section or in that same section of the JCP.org homepage or top page and later today. And if you'd prefer to get them more immediately, you can send an email to pmo@jcp.org. The last slide, for those of you who are on the WebEx call, has a little brief view of the different aliases and the different ways that, or the different issues that should be addressed with the different aliases so that we can respond to them more efficiently. Admin for administrative issues, spec submit when you're submitting a milestone posting, PMO for more general questions, like questions about the process. And if there is broken stuff on the website, there's the webmaster at jcp.org. All of those are at jcp.org. Thank you very much, everyone. And I look forward to hearing from you and seeing JSR submissions. Have a good rest of your day.